listening to Shop Talk with your host, Kevin Tates. Brought to you by Eastwood Tools. Everything you need to do the job right.
Hey, gearheads, you're listening to Shop Talk, brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood. Our guest, John Gilbert, is a fascinating cat. No two ways about it. He's been and done a lot of things that we all wish we could do in our lifetime, and he just keeps on ticking the experiences off on his cosmic bucket list. He's a free spirit, a former biker, a custom painter that has apprenticed with the best, Watson, Kosmoski, and many more. I get the chance to talk with a lot of folks on Shop Talk, and I'm inspired by every single one of them. But John Gilbert is a living example of a spirit that loves life. John has spent a lot of time in the editor's chair and gives us some great insight as to what editors look for cover shots. The cover sells the book, and he gives us his opinion on what has to be done to produce a cover that sells tons of magazines. So listen up and get ready for a seriously entertaining chat with someone that's definitely the real deal. You are listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates, and we are brought to you by the Eastwood Company, makers of fine automotive tools and equipment. Well, folks, today we are talking with a particularly diverse character. John Gilbert has worn many hats in his tenure and has lived more than the average cat's worth of lives, I would say, and he's still kicking pretty high and wearing it out. You may know his name possibly from the Eastwood blog, the West Coast Report, but it's certainly not the only feather in his cap. John, how's it going, man?
I'm doing real well, man.
Good deal. So you're a West Coaster.
Yeah, I'm in Southern California. I'm in Orange County, pretty close to the coast.
Well, that's kind of where it all started, isn't it, this hot rod thing?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, California, you know, in the South, we like to believe that it all started down here, but, you know, a lot happened up north. You know, the magazines did. I mean, Hot Rod, that's the one that started it all, and that was, you know, that was right in L.A.
Yeah, and that was in the 50s, wasn't it?
48, I think. I think the first issue of Hot Rod was 48. I had the first issue for a long time, and then I had a litter of pups, and one of them puked on it, and I couldn't keep it, you know. It was,
stuck
together.
Well, for the people that... That's awesome. For the people that are listening to this, you know, sometimes I like to introduce somebody and say, well, this guy's a writer and this guy's a metal fabricator. But in your case, you've done so many things in your life, it's hard to pigeonhole you into one category. So why don't you do the justice of kind of tagging yourself? Tell us, like, the Reader's Digest version of the John Gilbert story. How'd you get started in all this stuff?
Well, gosh, how'd I get started? First off, I guess if a guy lives long enough, you get to do all these things. But, you know, my dad was a hot rodder. He raced on the dry lakes before World War II, and you know, after the war, I was born in 1952, and man, I was crazy about cars as far back as I can remember. There's photos of me in a pedal car in 1955 doing a wheelie with it. So, you know, that's when it started. You know, in first, second grade, I was drawing flames on my homework assignments and in class and everything. So that's where it started. I always wanted to be a customizer and a custom painter. And during high school, I started, you know, just custom painting stuff.
Well, let me ask you about that. How did you get started doing that? Did you just do it on your own? Did somebody see the flames on your notebook and say, hey, can you do that on my bike? Or what was the first commercial job that you did?
Well, I'll tell you, I painted a lot of my own stuff. I mean, when I was living in West Covina, California, and that's out in San Gabriel Valley, and I was painting mostly motorcycles. We did I had a friend that also painted. We did like a neighbor's horse trailer and a boat, you know, and accidentally oversprayed some cars. I don't know if those count. But I was doing the paint on my own stuff in California, but I hadn't sold a job. And in the summer of 70, I went back to Michigan. My cousin told me how much Harleys were selling for, and he bought a 49 Panhead, and the bikes in California are pretty expensive. So I went back to Michigan, and I stayed about a year. I started doing some paint on our bikes, And the guys in Michigan were seeing them, and you know, they'd asked me to do if I paint their bike, and it's how it started. I don't know if I could have started in California. The competition was real rough out here. I don't think I could have started in an area that was as saturated. Michigan, hardly anybody. There wasn't a lot of custom painters. I mean, there was Yosemite Sam, and there was Ron Finch, and you know, guys like that. But there weren't any. You know, there weren't that many guys doing stuff on a you know, on a lot lower level.
Well, I mean, we all read about, or we used to read about anyways, the Barris brothers and Dean Jeffries and the Watsons, and how you could, you know, just go up and these guys are just making beautiful, beautiful work, cars, bikes, what have you. But that same type of thing was also happening all over the rest of the country at the same time, and it's kind of neat that you were a part of that.
Yeah, it you know, it was, and I've learned it more through the years. I mean, John Kosmoski at House of Color, he started doing paints in 1956, and you know, and then the Pearls and Candies and stuff, I guess maybe, I don't know, 59, 60, I wasn't around for that stuff, although I did work for Larry Watson in 1974 when he was in Hollywood at Melrose and Gower.
Really?
In fact, it was Watson that taught me how to really shoot candies.
No kidding, man. Wow, man, I'm so jealous that you got coached by him. That's amazing, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. It really was, you know.
Well, yeah, because those are the forefathers of the whole thing. That, you know, those are the guys that would go down to the wharf and collect the fish scales and make pearls and stuff. I mean, I don't know, man. That it doesn't get any more old school than that, does it?
Yeah, I know. That's the early days, man. It's like the Renaissance when painters had to make their own paints. You know, 500 years ago, Caravaggio and all those guys grinding up different things to make pigments. That's kind of how the custom painters were back then.
Yeah.
Kind of a side note. Melrose and Gower in Hollywood. That building, the shop is still there. I can't think of the guy's name, but Larry had a bunch of light bulbs. You know, just tungsten light bulbs. And every one of them was a different pearl color. That was his color chart. And that thing, that bunch of light bulbs, as far as I know, it's still there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That needs to be in the Peterson or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know, huh? Well, it's kind of cool that it's in the exact spot that it was, you know? It was, just kind of a cool deal. And of course, you know, the light bulbs, the idea there was the pearls, you know, a rounded surface will make a pearl roll, and they were all, you know, Murano pearls, natural, you know, leaded pearl, the real deal.
The way to really grasp what a pearl is doing when light hits it is to see it on a curvature. A flat panel doesn't really give you much, but a light bulb, I guess that's the perfect spray-out card, right?
Right, exactly.
Interesting. Well, you know, it's funny. Technology changes, and we can go into a catalog any day of the week, you know, Eastwood included, with their candies and stuff like that. And we can order whatever we want. We don't have to make it. So, you know,
unless you live in California, they got us down to just about nothing. I mean, you can get canned things, you know. I mean, the 2K, the spray urethane things that Eastwood has, those are, you know, that's the real deal, and you can still get that here. But there's, you know, California is the forefront of nothingness, man.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. I lived in California for a little while, and I was a wannabe rock star, and you know, when the bands would break up that I was in, everybody else would go home and borrow money from their parents. And since I was a gearhead, I would go to work in the local body shops wherever the band split up, and I ended up at this place called Alejandra Porsche down off, where was it? Off Washington and by Lincoln down there on around Venice, if you know where that is. I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I know exactly where it is. Yep.
And at the time, this was 1987, I think, and we weren't allowed to wet sand because it would go down into the drains and it would get into the water system, and boy, it was huge. It was big time, really, really big fines for the shops down there to get caught with wet sanding water draining. So this is not a new thing for California. I'm
no,
sure it's
in fact, it used to be even more oppressive. We used to it was a California law that we'd wet sand out of a bucket, you know, and then when we were done, we had to drink the water.
Which creates quite a buzz. It wears off quick, right?
I couldn't help myself.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, it's good to know that some of the toluene fumes have altered your brain permanently. That's a
Yeah, it's a flashback from a steady diet of cabbage burritos, you know, for the entirety of my life. It's some sort of lysergic element in my brain cells.
Well, it's kind of sadly ironic that's the mecca of custom paint and all that stuff, and it's so heavily regulated now that everybody's got to leave.
Man, because it is a mecca. I mean, I know this stuff, it happened all over the country and in Canada and in a lot of places people wouldn't realize, but this is the mecca. And the thing is, you see, it's year-long out here, so it happens pretty much every day. We don't have the snow where the cars are off the road or anything, or the motorcycles. It happens every day, and so the art in its early stages, you know, it developed. Every day was time that things were developing. So for it to fade away from here, I mean, there's still a lot going on, but not like it was.
Yeah. Well, you know, and in some sense, I believe in safety equipment. I really do. If you've ever seen any of my videos or the stuff that I do on the TV shows, when it comes to painting with, you know, some catalyzed stuff, you know, I always prompt people to be smart and use their head and pay attention to safety. And you know, I don't know. I'm not going to get into a political debate or even a discussion on it, but it makes my jaw tighten up when you know, people aren't even given the opportunity to exercise common sense anymore, and that's all I'm going to say about it. But
it's something, man. I mean, the gearhead shows, you know, there's a guy and he's tack welding and he's, you know, all he's doing is closing his eyes, or he'll start grinding on something. And of course, they have to cut the scene because his hair caught on fire. But you know, and the paints, the urethanes, the isocyanates, man, I mean, those are some of the components from mustard gas, you know, the nerve gases from World War One. At least that's what I was told.
Well,
and I believe that stuff will knock you on the ground.
Well, one of the worst industrial accidents that ever happened in India, and it was a tanker car filled with polyisocyanate concentrate, and it killed hundreds of people when it spilled over. It's no joke, man, and that's what's in the paint to make it cure. So, you know, anybody that doesn't read the side of the can, then, I don't know, we all got to have some personal – that is America. It's the land of personal responsibility, so you got to own your stuff sometimes, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, let's move on to a different thing.
Yeah, you know, we probably shouldn't talk about the old days when it was acrylic lacquer and I'd be clearing motorcycle tanks in my garage with the garage door kind of a little half opened, and I'd open the door, I'd come out all, you know, kind of groggy, and there'd be about six neighbor kids with their bicycles under the door breathing the stuff. So, you know, we shouldn't talk about that.
It wasn't just you, John. I remember going to a paint training class. This was a color match class or something. It was Axo Noble, Sicken's line. And they showed us some old training films from the GM archives. And they had Corvette parts, guys in lab coats with siphon feed spray guns. The only safety gear they had was their lab coat. And they had glasses on. And they were spraying cars. And you know, and we looked at that. We all laughed about it because, you know, I mean – lacquer will give you a heck of a buzz, but
sure.
You know, it kind of lingers. It's not like a Merlot.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is about lacquer, of course, when you paint it, and these are things, you know, I don't know if these are urban legends or if they're actually true, but what I've heard is the buildup on your lungs from lacquer. If you stop painting 7 years, that'll dissipate. But the buildup from the urethanes on your lungs, that never goes away.
Yeah, well, it's also a neurotoxin, and that's dose-specific, just like bee stings. It can build up and build up and build up, and one day you just can't tolerate it.
There was a painter. In fact, my shop, I had a shop in Westminster. It was Auto Exotics, and in that complex, in fact, Killen, he had a shop in there one time before I was in there, but there was another painter, and they found him on the floor of his booth dead. I mean, that was it. He found his threshold.
Yeah. Wow.
Everybody's threshold is different, too. I mean, it's, you know, you got Bill Hines at 90-some years old, you know, smoking a cigar in the booth.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yep. Well, when we had a trim line stripe guy that would come around to one of the body shops, it was the shop that I managed, and Eddie would come around and lay pinstripes and tint windows and, you know, pull the plastic stripes and stuff like that, not real pinstripe, and you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And he had to change vocations. He was even a painter. He'd come to the shops, and he got sensitized to isocyanates. He couldn't work on fresh painted cars anymore. So, you know, it doesn't even take somebody being stupid. Like you said, everybody's threshold's different. So, guys that are listening to this, if you're listening to me and John talk, listen to what we're saying, because, you know, not to lecture, but this is the truth, man. You gotta be safe and you know, live to paint another day. So, you know, of course, we're listening to Shop Talk. We're talking with John Gilbert, and who has been a custom painter for a long time, and you just celebrated a birthday, so late happy birthday, and you're still kicking, you're still painting, right?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm still painting. I'm painting my own stuff. When you paint for other people, you gotta like paint up Elvis's face on a pink gas tank and a unicorn and stuff like that. And I used to really dread those kind of jobs. You paint for yourself, you get to do what you want. So.
Yep, that's true. It doesn't pay the bills, but man, you do get to do
what
you want.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yep. Well, let's talk about magazines. You have been an editor and certainly a journalist and a writer for a bunch of different magazines. And I was smiling when you told me that you were the editor for Tailgate, because I remember picking up my first issue of Tailgate, you know, because I'm into trucks, obviously, and reading this book and thinking, oh, my God, this is the next best thing to porn other than Easy Rider.
Well, you know, it's a young demographic, and the consequences of that, you know, I mean, hey, girls dig trucks, and, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, but I jest. It wasn't like porn, but man, you captured the essence of the outdoor car show with the beautiful ladies. So thank you for that. Thank you for those pages.
Oh, you bet, absolutely. Well, you know, it was just like, you know, before Easy Riders, you know, there was motorcycle magazines and stuff, but nobody showed the lifestyle. Some might call it a dark underbelly, but you know, nevertheless, it was a kind of what a fun lifestyle.
Yeah.
But anyways. Yeah, Tailgate, because I was a bike painter, I became friends. Well, Keith Ball was the editor of Easy Riders for, about 23 years. And I met Keith in 1972, and as a bike painter, you know, I was around the magazine when stuff would get featured. And then my own bike was on the cover of the August 1976 issue.
Very
and,
cool.
So I was around the magazine, you know, as a, you know, just riding and hanging around and as a painter. And then it evolved into, you know, becoming an editor.
Yeah. It's funny how that happens. When I first started, not to compare myself to you, but, you know, I have been a tech writer for a number of years, but never in the editor's chair. But when I started doing it, I would go around. There was a couple of magazines, Southern and Northern Rotter. I don't know if you remember those books.
Sure.
They're not in publication anymore. But I went up to those guys at a trade show. I had just started my Paintucation instructional video company, and I said, hey, guys, I can't afford to advertise in your book, but what I can do is I can write you tech stories if you'll put ads in the back. So they were open enough to that, and that's how I started being a freelance writer. And, you know, some of the Source Interlink book guys took me under their wing. Donald Farr, Wayne Cook, Miles Cook, Jeff Ford, those guys, you know, they saw that that I was serious about it and wanted to produce good stories. So they helped me out a little bit as well. So my point is that I was given opportunities, and I was mentored by a lot of people, and I will be eternally grateful for that. Their kindness stays with me, and I hope to pass it on. But for you, throw out some names of some of the mentors. I know you've talked about Kosmoski. Who else helped kind of guide you along to where you are?
Well, you know, it was Keith Ball that you know, he did a lot of things that helped me that I wouldn't. It would have never happened. In 1999, Keith called me. I've always had trucks. I've always had, you know, hot rod trucks, outlaw pickups, big motors, haul ass, most tire trucks for, you know, hauling bikes that didn't always run, or maybe you might haul off it at the bar and have to put it in the back of the truck, you know, and call it a night. So Keith, he called me one day and he says, yeah, he, we want to do a truck magazine in the spirit of Easy Riders. And that's all he told me. I came up with the title Tailgate. Like Easy Riders, and Easy Riders is a motorcycle magazine that didn't have, you know, bike or cycle or nothing in the name. It just implied the lifestyle. And Tailgate it just worked real well for kind of capturing all the different elements of the magazine.
Yeah. Well, and it's become a household name. You know, tailgating is associated with every major sport and parking lots at concerts and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, not that you're responsible for all of that, but people are certainly accepting of that term. So, I mean, it was a great name for the book, man.
Yeah, it was.
Might have had some other connotations as well, but
yeah, it was a double entendre. The positioning line for Tailgate was the titillating truck magazine. And they wouldn't let me put that on the cover, but it was on the inside cover. So it just goes from there.
Yeah. Well, you talked about lifestyle and the lifestyle of, you know, not only Easy Rider, but Tailgate. And you know, so let's talk about that. Do you have a Harley? Have you still got a bike?
Yeah, I have. I've got two bikes. They're both in the living room. It's 2010 was the last time I rode to Sturgis. I've got a bar hopper, but it's not, you know, I have very little willpower or self-control, and I kind of, it's best the bikes are locked up in the living room and that I don't really ride that much anymore.
Okay.
I'm into hot rods. I've been doing cross country trips in hot rods, and that's what I'm really, really digging these days.
Yeah. Well, that's big fun too. And you know, hot rods don't fall over quite as easy as a
no.
Old panhead or something. Yeah.
No, yeah. They don't. You don't have to know to put your feet down.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to tell on myself here too. And there's something really, you know, I can't think of a better word than romantic about thinking about jumping on a bike and doing a long haul road trip. But the last time I did anything like that on a Harley, I was doing a TV show called Classic Rides on the DIY Network, and we had this 65 Electraglide that we restored.
First year Pan.
First year Electric Start.
First year Electric Start, last year Pan.
Last year Pan. And it was a great old bike. It had the red and off-white two-tone, and we did a bunch of neat stuff with it, you know, the S&W stuff and bored it a little bit, and, you know, just a lot of maintenance. We had a wonderful guy. His name was Dunk, Bill Dunkelberg, and he was a lead tech at a local Harley shop in Knoxville, and super nice guy, and willing to pass on his knowledge, and had all these great homemade tools, and it was just awesome. He was really good on TV, never done it before. He was kind of my guest host for the whole series. Anyway, and I know I'm getting long-winded on this, but what we ended up doing is when we pay off a TV show, you go for a test drive, and you talk, you know, all the hero shots about, ooh, this runs great, all this kind of stuff. That bike beat me to death. We drove that thing all day. You know, the Dragon's Tail in Knoxville. We around there, beautiful roads.
Yeah.
That bike nearly killed me. And the small of my back, I swear to God, I was an inch and a quarter shorter when I got off of that ride. And I it reminded me, because I had bikes in high school, and it reminded me that, you know what, I'm not as young as I feel like I am. And holy cow, this thing is rough. So I know what you mean about driving hot rods. You know, they're just easier.
Yeah, it is. I mean, in a 65 Pan, that's a swing arm. They hardly went on the hogs. They went to, you know, rear suspension in 58. And, you know, I've ridden bikes from, like, Detroit to L.A., rigid frame bikes, you know. It just beats you up. I mean, if I was still 20, I could still do it. You know, I probably would. In fact, the last time that I considered going anywhere on a long-distance ride, we're going to Sturgis. My friend Clean Bean edits Biker. He's roving editor for Easy Riders now. And Beatnik is art director. It's tradition every year we ride to Sturgis. And in 2004, and I've got a bike. It's called a Phantom bike. It was custom-built for Dave Nichols. Dave's the editor of Easy Riders. This bike was built by CMC, which is also, they became Indian in 1998. eight, nine, somewhere. Anyways, my bike's a 99. Rigid frame bike, stretch. In fact, there's pictures of it on my Eastwood blog. It's in the living room now. I'm going to build it again. But anyways, that rigid frame bike, in about 2 days before the us three idiots were going to ride our old bikes to Sturgis, Dean on his shovel head and Beatnik on his Sportster and me on this Evo rigid frame, I'm out in the garage and I'm trying to Mickey Mouse a windshield onto my ape hangers. My girlfriend looks at the bike and she says, "That thing's going to hurt you." And, you know, I never listened to her, but this time, for some reason, I did. I said, "You know what? You're right." And I went to Westminster Harley, walked in, and they probably figured I was there just to mooch some donuts and coffee or something. And I saw the salesman, and there was a pearl black Road Glide sitting on the showroom floor. And I went up and I sat on it, and I was talking to Ron Salesman, and I said, "You know, I don't really care much for baggers." And he says, "Yeah." And I says, "In particular, I don't like this color." He says, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, write it up." And he goes, "What?" And I says, "Write it up. I need the thing for Sturgis tomorrow or the day after. We got to go." So that was, And then in that bike, interestingly enough, or at least to me, that bike went to Sturgis every year up until last year from 2004. It was an 05 model. The Harleys, the new ones come out in August right before Sturgis.
Yeah.
And I rode it that year, and then the next year I was working for Hot Rod Bikes magazine, and I'd left Easy Riders and gone over to Prime Media, smartest thing I ever did. And so they went, and then I sold the bike to Dean. I bought a 56 Ford Big Window, and I needed money for that, so I sold the Road Glide to Dean, and then he rode it to Sturgis every year, and then in 2010 I borrowed it back to ride to Sturgis. So anyways, that's my bagger story.
Well, it's nice. It's nice that you can keep up with it anyways, and of course you got the living room furniture to look at and, you know, kind of remind you of when you were 20, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Some things never change. A friend of mine, I was in Calgary for about a year. I had a custom paint shop up there, and some friends from Calgary came down when I'd moved down here, and they took some pictures. I had a bike. Well, the bike that was on the cover of Easy Riders, it was also in a David Mann painting called Won't Start, but I had that bike in the bedroom. I was competing for the show season, I knew I'd wreck the bike and not complete the season if I didn't do something to make it harder to keep from riding it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, my friend, she just sent me a photo when I was 24 with that bike in the bedroom. So I've always had motorcycles in the house.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the best place to work on them.
You know, it really is, because the TV is kind of too damn big to move out to the garage. I still got an old Magnavox with a big old tube, and it's not real portable. So it's easier to ride the back into the living room to watch TV and work.
Well, let me ask you something. I know what I get out of writing. I like the form of expression. You've obviously been into it a long time. What's the biggest thing that you get out of being, let's just say, an automotive journalist? What cranks your tractor about that?
You know, there's a lot of things about it that are really amazing, and one of them is you get the chance to meet people that you ordinarily wouldn't meet. And as an editor, when you go to these different towns, people are always really nice about taking you and showing you stuff, private car collections that you wouldn't have that opportunity to see them if you weren't an editor.
That's
pretty
truth.
Neat. It's a creative expression. I mean, it's like, you know, playing a guitar or you know, any other art form. It's just real satisfying. It's like painting a car or a motorcycle. You know, when it's done, you stand back and look at it. It's just a good feeling. Unless you got a big run, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's very cool. You know, a quick question for you. Left-handed or right-handed?
I'm left-handed, but I guess actually I'm ambidextrous because I, let's see here. I fire a rifle left-handed. I fire a handgun right-handed. I use a spray gun right-handed, and I airbrush left-handed.
Hmm.
So, I guess left-handed for the most part.
Yeah, I've been mostly left-handed, but working in crash shops, I learned how to use my right hand for painting. You know, you're painting a conversion van or an extended cab dually or something like that. Boy, that your main dominant hand's going to get tired real quick. So
Yeah, you know what? And I do hand off from left to right. I can't hold a gun in the air like I used to, man. It's just not as easy. And I used to paint. We used to paint vans. You know, do the mid bands and stuff down the sides and get up on the roof or shoot a complete on a van and
it's funny how as we get a little bit older, I like to think we get smarter and learn how to use our resources a little bit better.
I wish I was getting smarter. I don't know.
Well, listen, I'm going to throw a quote at you. This is actually from your blog. By the way, we're talking with John Gilbert, automotive journalist extraordinaire. He's got the Eastwood blog, West Coast Report. And this is a quote from your blog. I think of Eastwood's restoration supplies like seasoning is to food. Just like salt, pepper, and spices can be added to season anything from Mexican food to Polish dishes, Eastwood paints and primers, tools, and sandpaper work on any vehicle, no matter what it is. So obviously you're a fan of the Eastwood Company, or, you know, we've got a finite amount of time and years left, and we don't associate with people that we don't have respect for. What is your take on the direction that the Eastwood Company is moving in not just being a private label company and slapping stickers on stuff, but actually developing products? For me, I like it. For you, as a custom painter, to me, that statement states that it's more about the painter than the product. What did you mean by that quote?
Well, the quote, it's you know, primer or clear. It doesn't care if it's going on a 1972 Ferrari, you know, Dino 246 Dino or a 56 Ford pickup or a moped. It's
I've said the same thing. I've said the very same thing, and I completely agree with you. And when I'm trying to coach people through, you know, learning fundamental skills, they want to say, what's the best paint gun, and what's the best clear, and what's the best this? And really, unless you wrap your head and your hands around the fundamentals, it really doesn't matter. And for me, you know, not to blow smoke up, you know, the Eastwood portal, but for them to offer entry-level prices with actually quite professional and sophisticated products that you can get great outcomes from, you know, the clear acts, like you said, just the same on somebody's first paint job as it does on a Ferrari. I like the direction that they're going.
Yeah, I do too. I use their products you know, a long time before I met those guys at a Source Interlink roundtable. You know, they were in town and they weren't sure what they were going to do. And I thought, well, hell, we'll just go see some car collections and stuff. And we became friends. And that's how the blog evolved. That's why it's called the West Coast Report. It's kind of a pulse on what's happening here in California. Although when I travel, I mean, on the blog, there's, you know, the Syracuse Nationals, there can be the, you know, shots from the old F-100 Super Nationals in Knoxville. It can be, but for the most part, it's Southern California.
Yeah.
What was the question? Oh, yeah, the spices, the paint. Yeah, the thing is, and maybe deviating from that a little bit, well, I'm building a car right now that's actually I'm rebuilding. Originally it appeared in Street Rodder. I think it was six issues. It was a Track T, and Jim Rizzo was the Easy Editor of Classic Trucks now, but he was the tech editor at the time that I was the editor of Custom Classic Trucks, and his wife built this Track T. Well, I got the car. I bought the car. I'm getting ready to do a cross-country trip in it to Hell, Michigan. The story's called Hot Rod to Hell. And anyways, the parts on it are real quality stuff, and they don't need to be changed, but the car sat outside 5 years, and it, you know, it needs cosmetics, and pretty much everything that I'm doing to the car is, you know, are just Eastwood paints. In fact, I'm going to, the 2K chassis paint, I'm going to spray the body, the semi-gloss black.
The 2K aerospray, the rattle can?
Yes, exactly.
Isn't that some neat stuff?
Man, I love it. I tried to clear. I do, I'm an artiste now. I do abstract expressionist paintings. You know, it's
custom paint,
but
that.
It's, you know, the abstract paintings. And I used the clear on one of the paintings. That was the first time I tried it. And God, it's you know, it's next perfectly. The fan, you can adjust the fan on the can, and the mill buildup, it you know, it laid out real nice and heavy. I can hardly wait to try it on a motorcycle tank.
Yeah, the first thing I shot, I did a product feature on it for them and shot my welding helmet with it. And I did just recently on the truck show, we've got a little Ford Ranger that I did the Transport stripes on the fender. And that's going to air pretty soon here, probably within the next couple of months. But I love this stuff. It's what a great idea, man. And it's got a 48-hour pot life.
The pot life, the 48 hours, we were – When I first saw this stuff, and I go, I think it's a 1-to-1 urethane. When I was in Canada, I was using this Endura, and we used to throw it in the freezer, and it'd extend the pot life. So I took, in fact, maybe in the 17th West Coast report just went up today. It'd probably be, 18. I did an experiment. There was still some clear in the can. I put it in a baggie and put it in the refrigerator. And 5 days later, I took it out and I sprayed with it. So it's still in the experimental stages, but it looks like you might be able to, put it in ice box. The only drawback might be is when my girlfriend saw it, she said, "Why is there a can of spray paint in the refrigerator?" But other than that, so far so good.
Well, it makes sense because that stuff, the ISO shut down at 50 degrees anyways, and it'll dry into bubble gum on you, but it just makes sense. And, I come from a long line of custom car builders and painters, my dad and my uncle, my dad would tell me stories about how they used to put the old enamels and the Enduro stuff on a hot plate. For those of you listening, I was born and raised in Western Canada, and, winters get cold up there, and they would have to paint cars regardless, and they would have a hot plate in the body shop and get the paint warm, so not only would it flow, but it would compensate for a lower metal temperature on the vehicle, because you got to get it done. And everything from crazy stuff to putting kerosene heaters in the back of box vans, heating the metal up from the inside so they could spray it in a 40-degree room on the outside. And you just got to think through problems like that. So what you're talking about seems doable to me.
Yeah. In fact, I've shot in cold climates. I had the paint shop in Michigan, and I was up in Canada too. And on the acrylic lacquer days, man, you're shooting with so much retarder. You think there's more retarder in the paint than there is lacquer thinner. But this is one of those stories where kids don't try this at home. But you're talking about talking about Canada and painting. My paint shop, Crazy John Custom Paint in Calgary, Alberta, I rented a stall. Actually, it was a little room at Calgary Collision. It was at McLeod and 52nd. And these guys did a lot of production jobs, cheapy stuff for car lots. We called them splash jobs.
Yep.
And I'd be in there late at night doing artwork on a tank or something, and they had this booth, this homemade thing. It was, sheetrock and tubifores and stuff. And one night, man, I thought somebody gut shot a gasoline tank or something. What happened is they ran out of reducers, so they were doing what they called a gasoline special. They were cutting out the enamel with gasoline. So,
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
Yeah, let's just light up a cigar after that one.
Yeah, really. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, let's. Got a couple questions for you too. You sent me some pictures, and thank you for doing that. And
sure.
if it's okay with you, I wouldn't mind talking to Nick and the boys about maybe posting some of these shots, particularly the fine art photos. I was going to ask you about that, but you kind of answered the questions. And for those of you listening that can't see them, man, beautiful, beautiful color combinations. And I was going to ask you about that. It looks like maybe you had a show or you're displaying at a museum.
Yeah,
or
that is an art exhibit. Yep. It's a yearly thing. David Mann painted the center spread paintings in Easy Riders for, 25-some years. He started about the fourth issue of Easy Riders doing the center spread paintings. And Dave passed away September 11th, 2004, and there's an event called Chopper Fest to honor Dave. And originally, it started out, they had the art exhibit was Dave's work, and then a few years back, I was invited. I just started doing these abstract paintings. They're on reverse glass. I paint on the backside of the glass, so you can lay metal flake on there, and you don't have to. I mean, it's immediately you can't feel the surface because it's behind the glass.
Yeah, well, that's how a boat's done, right?
Yeah.
With clear gel.
Yeah. In fact, I got the idea when I was a kid in the mid-60s, with slot cars, we had clear bodies, and no matter how bad you glopped the paint on, you'd flip them over and look at the top, and the paint was perfect.
Yep. I like it. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm using AutoAir colors, which are available through Eastwood. They've got them, all the colors, and I kind of stumbled on it. One day I was cleaning things out, and I just didn't have the heart to toss paint out, and I started on the rear window of a 66 Chevy. I got that up in my office now, and then I pulled the window out of my 75 Chevy and painted that, and then I took the glass out of a light table. We don't use them for slides anymore because we do digital photography, so I had this 30x40 piece of glass, and I had some rose paint, 57 Oldsmobile rose paint metal flake, and I just started painting, and it's like, wow. And I learned, you know, it's kind of funny because you can push the limits, the paints. You know, when you paint something, you want it to come out really nice so you don't get too carried away. But on this abstract art, you know, I mean, happy accidents make stuff look good. So I could really experiment. And what I learned is that it's water-based paint, and I'm painting on the glass, and about a day or two later, you can't scrape that stuff off the glass. I don't know how it etches or how it bonds so well, but it does. So it answered the question, well, how is this stuff going to stick to metal? No problem.
Yeah. No, it's great paint, and it is. It's non-catalyzed, and it's water-based. It's not water-borne. It's water-based.
Exactly. There's the water-borne. It's a solvent. You know, it's a different deal. The water-based is pure water. And, man, I got to tell you, it's really fun to take my spray guns out in the front yard and start hosing them out and stuff, you know, instead of having to use thinner.
Get a rise out of your neighbors, too.
Yeah. In fact, there's a story I did for Hot Bike magazine. When I was at Hot Rod Bikes, we ran this story in Hot Bike, and it's still online, and there's pictures, you know, of clearing, of washing the spray guns out in the front yard after I was done, and also, it's a tech story. Probably Google Hot Bike, John Gilbert, AutoAir colors, and the story would come up.
Yeah, cool. Tell me about the Chadley Coupe.
The Chadley Coupe. That is it's a 30 model. A guy named Chadley Johnson he's in Wisconsin. I can't remember if it's Eau Claire or Fond du Lac or Manitowoc. But anyways, Chadley's he built this. It's on 32 rails. It looks like it's not a rat rod. It's a traditional hot rod because it's on a. It looks like it's a lot older than it is. It's original paint. It's got a 7.5-inch chop. It's original paint from Ford. That's just, you know, it's most of it's still there.
Yeah, and it's got a deuce grill on it. It's got a 32 grill on it.
It's got
too,
a deuce grill.
It?
It's got a Walker radiator, brand new. He, a friend of mine, Henry, owns Newport Classic Cars in Newport Beach, and he told me, he says, "Yeah, I bought this coupe off of eBay." And I looked at it, and I go, wow. And he says, yeah, they want $1,500 to bring it out here. And I says, oh, shoot, man, I'll jump on a plane and go get it. And before I knew it, man, I was at the airport in Jacksonville. A friend of mine picked me up, and then we went to Hastings and got the car. You know, I talked to Chadley before I went back there, and he spent 3 years building the car and everything. I mean, instead of a generator, it had a power gen alternator, and it had bias-ply tires, but they were brand-new Coker Firestones. And the motor, it's a 54 Chrysler Hemi 331-inch with 6 two-barrels. And that, I'm sure the purists just cringe when they think about how this car was done. He took a Chrysler New Yorker with 20,000 miles and plucked the motor out of it and, you know, let the rest of the car go to wherever. Probably, I don't know, maybe guys shot at it out in the alley. But,
yeah.
And the Model A was an original parade car, And first thing he did was whack the roof 7.5 inches. But anyway,
yep.
I picked the car up. I spent about 2 days just kind of going over it. And then on the bias flies from Anastasia Island, St. Augustine, I drove up to Chattanooga, right through Georgia, man. This is the middle of the hottest heat last August, coming through Georgia, up 75 to Chattanooga. And then when I got to Chattanooga, I stopped and visited Corky Coker. He'd always invited the editors to come back and see his museum. And and while I was there, I mooched a set of tires, the Excelsior radials. And the bias plies are really, you know, they're good, but they're bias plies, and they hunt. They bob and weave.
Yeah.
So when I put the radials on the car, that picked up another 10 miles per hour. I was heading from Chattanooga to Nashville, and, man, it just started really rolling. And I went from there, I went up to Lincoln, Nebraska, to stop by and see Speedy Bill and my buddy Damon Lee at Speedway Motors.
Yeah, very cool. So how long was that road trip total?
Well, I was on a deadline. I'd promised Henry that I would have the car at Lake Tahoe to a private show on South Lake Tahoe, that I'd have it there. And so I was, you know, I was on a schedule. So I started flying in Columbia, Missouri. The motel guy didn't give me back my driver's license, and I didn't catch it. I was tired. The exhaust in that car dumps right in front of the cowl, so I was breathing pure carbon monoxide. you know, and I was drinking the Starbucks double shots and chasing them with a couple of 5-hour energy drinks, those little things in the bottle, you know, to give you a heart attack. And so I couldn't get a motel room, so I slept two nights in this coupe with a 7.5-inch chop, and I drove all night. I pulled into Cheyenne, Wyoming. It was just getting dark, so I went through Laramie at night, man, and that was, I hated that because I would have liked to have seen the countryside. I'd never been through that stretch. But I made it in time, and then the funny thing was, well, Henry bought this, you know, those drag pack Challengers. I built 50. He's got number 47.
Oh, my gosh.
And we drove that. You can't put a dealer plate on them or nothing. I mean, they're illegal. They're a drag race car, and that's it. Well, we drove it on the street. I don't know if I should be admitting this. We took it kind of on side streets, Lake Tahoe, down to the lake.
Right.
Yeah.
For exhibition only. For exhibition only.
For exhibition only. And accidentally, I was driving the coupe, but Reed that was driving the car accidentally did a kind of a big burnout across somebody's driveway. So
sometimes your foot slips,
Well, they're idle high.
Yeah. Well, one other thing about these pictures that you sent, and you know, I'm a dog person. I always have been. We've got dogs, and they're my sweeties. And it seems like there's a prominent presence of the canine persuasion in some of your shots. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I've always had dogs, man, since I was a little kid. I just love dogs. And in fact, when I was doing tailgate, I tried to drive to as many shows as possible. I really didn't like getting on a plane. I bought a brand new little Chevy S10, and I had a lab pit mix named Bongo. And Bongo was in tailgate quite a bit, and then he was in custom classic trucks also. And in fact, I created it was called Truck Dogs, and guys sent in pictures of their dog with their truck, and that was kind of fun. And I just have one dog. A neighbor passed away, and she had this pit bull we knew from a puppy, and they were going to take it to the pound, and we couldn't see that happen, so we got her.
She's
I know they like that the media likes to profile those dogs, but she defies all the stereotypes. She don't even know she's a dog.
Yeah, I hear that, man. And there's nothing like the love they give back to you, and it's just it's a gift.
Yeah, it's something else.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, you've done so many things in your tenure as a writer, as a custom painter, as an editor, now a fine artist. What's next for John Gilbert?
Man, I hope another check, you know? Yeah, I'll work my dying day, you know? I never...
okay, that one's going to cut a bit of applause here. There we go. Yeah. I hear you, man. Well, I don't know. We hope that you keep on doing the Eastwood blog, because as I've been reading it, it's very entertaining, and your writing style is I don't know. It pulls me in. So that's something that it's hard to keep my attention these days, but you've managed to do it. So well done.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you telling me that. Thanks a lot.
Well, where can people find your art? Have you got a website? Do you want to direct some people towards some different blogs? I know that the Eastwood thing, but where else can people find what you've contributed?
Well, shoot, I don't have a website for it or anything, and I did have some work in a gallery in Fountain Valley, but I don't now. I guess I'll run some photos, maybe even do kind of a tech, on my Eastwood blog. I mean, every year I'm at Chopper Fest in Ventura, California, in the David Mann, the art exhibit. And that's about it. It'd be great if I sold a painting. I haven't yet. I've given a couple away to friends as presents, but I haven't sold anything yet.
Well, maybe you combine that, and maybe that's where that check you're dreaming about will come
from. That'd be great. It really would, but, that'd be good.
Well,
otherwise, I got to sell this dog and my Buick and, a couple other things.
Yeah, that's no fun at all. Well, start a website, get a Facebook page, get some of your art out there, man. I would love for people to see some of the stuff that I've seen, and I just wanted to say thanks for spending your time with us, man. It was it's good to get to know you a little bit better,
and
I don't know, there's still some stories there, and we're gonna have to revisit this when maybe there's been a little lubrication happening, and get some of the seedier side of John Gilbert.
Well,
what do you think?
What would be kind of cool sometime if we talked about it a little bit, but how to get into a magazine and how to do the photography and what editors look for when they choose something to go on cover and that process.
Well, listen, let's jump right into that. We got time. This is the internet, and I'm sure people would love to hear about that. So let's touch on that a little bit. I agree with you that we need to revisit this, but kind of in a nutshell, you've been an editor. What are you looking for a cover vehicle? I know we got to be there. We got to be at the shows, and we've talked about this before. But is there a checklist in your brain that either lets you write one off or pull one in and start asking more questions?
I've been an editor, I guess, 5 times. I probably never would have had the job if I hadn't started Tailgate. When I had, been qualified or whatever. Funny thing is, they tried to hire Courtney Hollowell to edit Tailgate. After I created it, I turned it in. They decided they're going to do a magazine. They decided they would, and then I buggered off for 3 months. And they started calling guys to see if they could if they'd want to edit it, or if they would. Nobody knew what to do with the thing. It's Rob Fortier. They asked Rob. He wasn't interested. And, of course, Courtney was doing. They just launched Street Trucks. But anyways, back to the cover stuff. My first cover, Tailgate, was a black S10, and the first thing I wanted to do was break all the rules I heard. There was a rule, a truck magazine wouldn't put a black truck on the cover. Trucking wouldn't do it. Sport Truck wouldn't do it. None of the truck magazines would do it. So I thought, well, we're going to make a statement. We're going to launch with a black truck on the cover. And
right.
We did. And boy, that issue had launched hard. We had a 40% sell-through. In fact, the magazine went from zero to number two in its category on the newsstand in 18 months. It was ABC audited, and the numbers were real. They weren't contrived. It was selling real well.
Wow. And you think that's attributed to the black S10 on the cover?
Absolutely not. It was the girl standing next to it.
I like your honesty. That's awesome.
But anyways, but the covers, it's there's you walk up on some, thing is I've built trucks and cars and bikes and stuff, and when I look at something, I know how many times a guy they don't go together the first time, and you don't put them together without maybe scratching a fender well or a dashboard flaking chrome off something. It just doesn't happen. So when I see something that is you're trying to imagine how a human could put something together and have it so perfect. you know, that's one of the things I look at. And of course, and it's the profile, or car designers call it the center line. I look at the profile, the stance, and that's the thing, like rat rods, man. They can look cool as hell, and they're rusted with big holes and all this stuff.
Yep.
But the shadow, the cameo is just bitching.
Yep. Yeah, I built a little Mustang, and I took it into the wheel alignment shop, and he put – this guy is a road racer. He understands. He's raced VIR and all these tracks, and he gets it. And the suspension on this car is pretty sophisticated. It's certainly not an old Mustang
anymore. Yeah, I see
your
car. Badass.
Oh, thanks, dude. Appreciate it. I'll toss you the keys sometime. But you know, I made a three-quarter-inch change. I dialed the coilovers down 3/4 inch, and it made all the difference in the world. And you're exactly right. It's almost something intangible, isn't it, about the silhouette
yeah.
that you see and the clearance between the sidewall of the tire and the fender well. So you know, it's are you telling us that it's a little bit subliminal?
Yeah, it is. It's the look. I mean, it's I don't know if gestalt's the right term for it. You know, I went to college one time, spent a lot of money, so I try to remember those words they taught me. But it's just the overall look, man. It's how it strikes you, you know. It's
yep.
You know, that's a lot of it. And of course, sometimes something would go uncovered because it was the last minute and I didn't have anything. But
well, the bottom line is it's got to appeal to somebody on some level. And if you're sitting in that editor seat, you got to sell books. It's business.
Yeah, it is. You know, it was Brian Brennan. He's the editor of Street Rodder, and he's the editorial director. And he was my boss, and you know, one day he said, you know, you are responsible. You are the head of a company that makes $500,000 or $750,000 a year, and all of a sudden they put it in perspective. You know, it's you gotta hit those numbers, and people have to buy the magazine. That's another thing on the cover. You know, you can put the nicest truck in the world on the cover, but if it's something that very few people own, they're not going to buy the magazine. So you have to be careful. You have to put, you know, something that people are going to want to, in that, you know, 5 seconds or less that somebody decides if they're going to grab a magazine off the newsstand, that's what it has to be.
So it's got to be something with mass appeal. It's got to have the right vibe. It's got to have the right silhouette. And it's got to have that je ne sais quoi, if you will, that is, you know, I think personally that is somebody's passion that has found their way onto a vehicle. Not to get all philosophical or anything like that,
yeah.
But that has to be what it is, because somebody made it look that way, and it has to translate. It has to be picked up by other people. So it's got to come from some psyche somewhere, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and another thing, too, and when I put something on cover, like, you know, the guys at the truck to tell you, you know, those guys are pretty young. My first cover was like I was 24 years old, and that's a kid. And that was a pretty neat thing for me. That having something go cover, that gives you esteem. I mean, when times are really crappy, crummy, and everything's going wrong, you look back and say, well, you know, at one time I had something on the cover of a magazine, and that's a pretty good accomplishment. So when I put something on cover, I think about what it does for somebody, and you know, that's one of my considerations too, you know.
I can speak from personal experience. I grew up flipping the pages of car magazines. I've still got some of the books that my dad had when he was, you know, a teenager. And to have a vehicle in the pages of a magazine, people can say what they want about, you know, print is dying and all that kind of BS, but I don't believe it, and I don't want it to happen, because there's something very cool about not only a magazine itself, but having your vehicle within the pages. And I've recently been featured in another magazine with the Mustang. And let me tell you, man, it's a thrill, and it's something I will remember for the rest of my life. And you know, I'm like you. With my job, I get put into rooms with people that I would never be put into rooms with, and I'm humbled and honored by it. And that's one of the things, you know, and it wasn't because I do TV shows. It was because I hit the nail on the head with a neat-looking car, and it does what it's supposed to do. So, you know, Johnny Hunkins decided he wanted to feature it in
Popular
Hot Rodding. So we did the shoot with McGaffin who we've talked to here on Shop Talk probably about a month and a half ago now, and I'm thrilled, I'm giddy, the hair stands up on my arms when I think about the fact that I'm going to see my car in a magazine. So, you know, anything that you can share with us and with the people that are listening to Shop Talk about how to maybe, you know, have an edge or an angle, I think it's wonderful, and thank you for sharing that.
You bet. Yeah, magazines are magic. I mean, you know, I came from an era where it was television and it was magazines and there wasn't much else, and television was pretty square. You rarely, I mean, you did once in a while, leave it to Beaver, you'd see a 40 Ford or something, but you know, the car scene was pretty much magazines, and it's always been magic. And even though, you know, all the other the different forms of media these days, I mean, magazines are still magic. They're, you know, I think it's pretty neat that, you know, Source Interlink, all the titles we archive, you know, the magazine goes on the newsstand and there's the stories, and then it doesn't die. You know, they archive it online, and you know, Google different things and you know, these articles, these features, these tech stories, you know, they live forever.
And that's, you know, that doesn't get lost with the magazine if it gets torn or if your dog pukes on it.
Yeah, if your dog, you know, it's a bad load of Alpo and, you know, things go wrong, you know, of course, hey, now, if dog does that to a computer, it's really ugly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
well,
bad.
The good thing about the Internet is that it's everywhere and nowhere, and we can hook back up to it.
Yeah,
so.
try getting dog puke out of your $3,600 27-inch iMac, you know. It's not going to happen.
Oh, my God.
Back to the, you know, the magazine stuff and how guys can get stuff in. You know, the number one thing, Robert McGaffin, he, you know, he hit it right on the head when he said the shows. I mean, we go to the car shows, all the editors do, and we go to the shows to, you know, to look for features and everything. But there was, the only problem with that is, it's like, you know, like I'd be at the F100 Super Nationals in Knoxville, there's six other truck magazine editors there, you know, we're tag teaming the same trucks. Maybe sometimes at all costs, I avoid featuring something that's been in another magazine because people don't like buying the same feature twice. So another way that I get features is guys send in readers' rides. In fact, if you know, I'm talking to anybody that's listening to this, and I don't care what kind of vehicle they have. Whatever their favorite magazine is, there's going to be a reader's ride section. And take some pictures and send them in, because I'm telling you, I would get reader's rides, and I'd look and I'd go, whoa, this thing should be a feature. This thing is cool, you know? And I'd make arrangements for somebody to shoot it. Or one time I drove up to Washington. I checked a brand-new Harley-Davidson Ford F-150 out of the press fleet, thinking that Spokane was a weekend drive. From Orange County, put my bag in the truck and bonsaied up there, and I shot the truck for a feature. But there was a lot of times that, you know, a guy in the middle of nowhere would send photos, and I go, man, this thing deserves more. And that's another way of getting
great
the vehicle
discovered.
Great idea,
man. Great tips. Well, John, is there anybody else you want to give a shout out to or throw some names out there?
Sure. You know, I got a lot of people to thank. You know, the photography skills I learned from Reiko Hartman and Michael Lichter, it was kind of through osmosis. I didn't even, you know, I picked up a camera and learned to use a computer within months. I mean, when I started doing tailgate, man, I wasn't really a photographer or a writer. I just started doing it. But, you know, just being around this stuff, it's like, so anyways, thanks to those guys for the photography skills and thanks to the photographer, the lady that gave me such a hard time and angered me so bad that I picked up a camera and said, I'm not going to hire anybody. I'm just going to do it myself. I really appreciated her pissing me off. but anyways, and Tim Foss, the publisher at Source Interlink and the group I was in there, and Brian Brennan, the editorial director and editor of Street Rodders, Brian's the guy that when I left Hot Rod Bikes, he's the guy that started giving me work at Street Rodder and eventually hired me to edit custom classic trucks. So I owe a lot to Brian. And, man, there's a bunch of guys, but I can't think of it. You know what? Maybe on my blog I'll sit down. That's the beauty of writing. It might take me 6 hours, but I'll write a list that somebody could read.
Well, John, thank you so much for sharing your time and your magic and your art with us. It's been a pleasure talking to you, buddy.
Well, thank you. Hey, real quick, you know, there's a comment section on my weekly blog, and if anybody's got any questions, just put them right there, man. I'll answer it if I can, I'll make something up.
And you can find that blog at eastwood.com. Down to the bottom of the homepage is a click link to the blog, or you can just Google Eastwood blog, and it'll take you right to it and right to...
Yeah, West Coast Eastwood or West Coast Report on a Google search. That'll come up.
Yeah, and I promise it's a good read, folks. It's you get a little taste of John's sense of humor and some really good sharing of his experiences and whatever subject he happens to be writing on. So, again, well done, my friend, and we hope to be hearing much more from you in the future.
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you very much. It was real good talking with you.
You too, and we'll do it again sometime. Folks, we're listening to John Gilbert and Shop Talk, brought to you by the Eastwood Company, makers of fine automotive tools and equipment. Do it right with Eastwood.
Well, to say I've enjoyed our conversation with Gilbert is an understatement, and I've invited John back to come back and chat. So keep on listening to Shop Talk, and keep on stopping by the Eastwood blog for the West Coast Report. Thank you for listening. We will see you down the road. In the meantime, check out everything at the eastwood.com website. Eastwood has what it takes to do the job right. And you know me, I like to do the job right. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates.